Ruud Gielens ist ein belgischer Regisseur und Videokünstler und arbeitet außerhalb Europas, meistens in Nordafrika. Er spricht über sein neuestes Projekt für das Festival Eurotopia. Es heißt Dreamland Europe. Er hat 26 Kinder mit ganz verschiedenen Hintergründen, die alle in Kairo wohnen, interviewt.
Hello, my name is Ruud Gielens. I'm a Belgian theater maker, video maker, but currently not really residing in Belgium, working a bit everywhere, but mainly in the Middle East.
Okay, and what are your plans here for Eurotopia Festival in Freiburg?
So what I did basically was I made a short, I would call it an artistic documentary, where I interviewed 26 kids who live in Cairo. Mm-hmm. Some of them are refugee kids, like children of parents who come from Syria, Eritrea, Somalia, who all live or reside currently in Cairo, but whose parents have like the aim or the dream or the goal to go to Europe. And basically what I did was interview kids about how they imagine their life will be in Europe, although they've never been and they've only heard the trickled-down stories from their parents about what it will be to live there and what it is to live that ultimate dream, maybe, of going to Europe. And out of these interviews that were all filmed in the same frame, I made, let's call it, a sort of meta-story, intercutting their answers into one narrative about the dreamland Europe.
Dreamland Europe. Do you think, though, you know, of course we say children's, maybe children's dreams are somehow a bit more colorful, but in terms of a vision of utopia, do you think the children's visions are actually the similar visions as adults, you know, their parents or adults who have never been to Europe? Is there a similarity?
Als er gefragt wurde, an dem Projekt Eurotopia teilzunehmen, wollte er nicht die Sichtweise von weißen europäischen Mittelschichtmännern, sondern diejenige von Kindern, die noch genug Fantasie haben, um an eine Utopie zu denken, die es für sie in Europa noch gibt.
I think it's quite particular because, of course, they're kids, and when they asked me to do this project, I said the last thing I want is to have white middle-class men talking about Europe. I want to give the speech or the parole, like we say in French.
Yes.
To people who still have this utopia about Europe, because I feel like the project is called Eurotopia, so I'm like, yeah, let's then really like consider it like a utopia. And there are still people who think of Europe as a utopia, and they, like, I'm not saying that the answers of the kids are that different maybe from people who've never visited or have really the dream of living there, but at least they fantasize about it in a way that might be insightful.
Außerhalb der momentan vorherrschenden düsteren Visionen von Europas Zukunft will er auch die Visionen der Kinder zum europäischen Narrativ hinzufügen.
Back in the children's vision and the utopian aspect.
Yeah, so we kind of nested ourselves in our own dark and somber views about the future of Europe. And what I really like about the children's answer is that it doesn't describe the reality at all, but I think also unrealistic view should be part of the narrative of the future of Europe.
Was ist mit der Dystopie? Wie kommst du mit dem weißen Privileg klar, wenn du nicht in Europa, sondern in Nordafrika arbeitest?
Did you in your somehow show anything of the children's view of this actually not being a utopia, of it being a dystopia? We have more than enough examples of this dysfunction here in Fortress Europa.
Yeah. I think also that what we're like, because I saw a run through of the other statements of Eurotopia, they're actually more about the dystopia of Europe than about the utopia. So I find that also quite interesting that when you're making a project about the future of Europe, everybody's already negative from the start. So I'm not saying that we shouldn't be critical of where we live, but we should also just quite be aware of the privilege of where we are living and where we've grown up and where we are doing our way to survive. And I think like that also is like when I showed this movie to people who are close and dear to me, they also said like this is like so confronting for my privileged white middle class vision of the world.
You do deal quite a bit with this issue of white privilege. What role does this have to do in a lot of your work, you know, as a video artist who's working a lot in the Middle East, a lot outside of Europe? How do you place yourself within the state of white privilege?
Well, that's a difficult one because it's really difficult to take that position oneself or to talk about the position from who you are. But I think it's really important for people like us to be very aware of the privileges we have and where we come from and how we were raised, and that the privilege is part of us, and that we, in work or in visions about life, and especially when we go to places where people are much less privileged than ours, to at least acknowledge that that privilege is part of us, to be able to, like we say in German, speak of Augenhöhe, that we can talk on the same level by being aware of what you have and that others don't.
Er gibt den Kindern eine Stimme, die sonst nicht gehört würde. Er beschreibt eine neue Ästhetik, in der auch Volkslieder und volkstümliche Geschichten eine Rolle spielen.
Your work, though, is also an aspect of giving a voice to the voiceless.
Yeah, it is always. Like, I think that's like the main thing I always try to do, in a way, that I feel it's really easy for an artist, especially European art or white male European artist, and let's say it once more, be locked in to not break out of his own paradigms, in a way, and to be, like, to always like spin around the same subjects and to spin around the same ways of thinking and the same aesthetics. And I think a big part of my work is to make good art, or to try at least, or to make something that I find worthwhile showing to an audience. But at the same time, doing that by giving people a voice that often don't get a voice. And I'm not talking about politicians or activists even, but just trying to find those people who are left out of the narrative and who are not part of the voice, who are not part of history. And I think it's also about, a big part of my work is about rewriting history, like giving a different narrative to the narrative that we are taught in school, or that is forced upon us by belief, religion, culture.
And this is also a narrative that you brought up in, I think, this theater piece in the Maxim Gorky Theater in Berlin, Hartklappenkörnen, where you're dealing again with the old Volkslieder.
Yeah, yeah.
Which people,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, in Germany, I started at one point singing old German Volkslieder, and, you know, people my age, musicians my age, were like, what the hell are you doing? Oh my God, this is like from National Socialism. I'm like, well, I'm giving it a different voice, and maybe it doesn't have the same meaning.
Exactly. That's, I've done that in Germany, but I've also done that in Belgium, where I come from, where a lot of those, like, let's say, right-wing, like, we consider them now right-wing, unfortunately, because it's also a specific group or a specific political part of the spectrum has claimed that those songs are theirs. And I think it's absolutely necessary in order to deal with history, to take things that are in some way or form claimed by thinking or claimed by a certain political fraction, and to take them back and say, no, they're also part of our history. And like, a song is a song.
Yes.
And, I can sing a song whatever I want. And if I, as a colored person from Jamaica, sing these songs,
Van den Wagen on,
then the meaning or the message will be completely different. But it's also, that's how we give meaning to life and to art, by reclaiming also things that have been claimed too long by other people.
Yeah, and of course, now when we talk about Eurotopia or Fortress Europa, you know, of course, they are Volkslieder. Who are the folks? What is folks? What's going to become of Volksdom?
Yeah.
You know?
Like, if you take this term folk, then, and we only interpret it as something negative, instead of saying we also learn, like, Germany, of course, when you say folk, like, you're either a fascist or a communist. But like, you, like, your voice is also part of that spectrum of voices, and that's what makes the folk.
Yes.
I believe in the multitude of things.